Please be advised, this episode of the podcast may contain graphic descriptions of physical, mental, and emotional abuse. A person with these kinds of trauma may be triggered. Welcome to the Q Convos podcast.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Q Convos podcast with the Initiative for Equal Rights. My name is Fidelia, and today I'll be talking about intimate partner violence in queer women's relationships with Miriam Sule. Let me tell you a little bit about what this episode will be about. Intimate partner violence against women has been recognized as a public health problem with far-reaching consequences for the physical, reproductive, and mental health of women. According to research, almost one in four women reported having ever experienced intimate partner violence. The World Health Organization defines intimate partner violence as any behavior within an intimate relationship by an intimate partner that causes physical, psychological, or sexual harm to those in the relationship. It's one of the most common types of violence experienced by women. However, as interventions and initiatives to curb IPV, which is intimate partner violence, are being created and sustained even in Nigeria, intimate partner violence in the context of same-sex relations is still largely ignored. There's a lack of studies that address LGBT plus individuals involved in intimate partner violence, and queer women are unable to seek help for intimate partner violence within the mainstream structures that exist because same-sex relations are not recognized and are even criminalized in Nigeria. This means that queer women often find themselves stuck in violent and abusive relationships with no means of getting support, justice, or even just getting out of such relationships. So I have Miriam in the studio with me today, and we're going to talk about this some more. Hi, Miriam. How are you doing?
Hi, Fidelia.
Thank you for joining me. Miriam, are you comfortable sharing any personal experiences of intimate partner violence that you have experienced?
I am, actually. It's a long story. So do you want the whole story or you want like bits of it?
I would like a lot of the story.
So the first time my partner abused me was, it was a man. Then I was still not sure I was a lesbian, so I was still dating men. And so this guy, he was like 10 years older than me, and he was controlling and everything. And then I think the first time he hit me was at his brother's wedding, right? And his ex in quotes, because yeah. I don't know what that story is till today. So his ex came for the wedding, and we were supposed to stay in a room together, but him and his ex ended up staying in the room together because that's what his parents wanted. Or some stupid story like that. He was 10 years older than me, so there's no way it would have made sense to me. So it didn't make sense to me that, you know, I would be in another room beside their room while he's in. So I went out that night with my friends. And then when I came back, he told me before I left that when I come back, I should knock on the door and let him know that I'm back. And I did knock on the door, and I came back. I was drunk, so I was really hyper and everything. So I was knocking on the door, and he wasn't answering, but I could see movement in the room. So I knew someone was there, but I wasn't sure if the person was coming or not. So I kept knocking. Maybe they couldn't hear me, but I was drunk. So I think a lot of things were like more emphasized to me, right? So immediately he opened the door. I think it was actually the ex that opened the door. And then he rushed to the door because he saw that she had opened the door. And then the moment he opened it, he was like, "Why was I knocking like that?" And next thing, he slapped me. I was in shock, right? So I never addressed that particular incident for a really long time. Like, I just like deleted it from my memory until the next one happened. So the next one, what happened? We had already broken up, but then he didn't speak to me for like a month. And so in my head, we're already broken up. But then one day he messaged me and we started talking, and I think I was drunk or something, right? So I kept texting him back like nothing happened, right? But I already knew that we're not dating. And then the next morning he was calling me and calling me and calling me and calling me and tell me to come to Akure, which is where he was living at the time. He's living in Benin with me. And he was calling me to come to Akure. And because I didn't really understand how our relationship ended, so I actually decided to go to Akure to go meet him. So I got there, and things happened, and I found out that he was, when I say things, he had sex, right? And then during the sex, his phone kept ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing, and he had to stop and pick up the phone and then talk to whoever it was. And I already knew who it was because it was someone I thought he was cheating on me with. So it was just like a confirmation as at that time. And another thing that stood out for me, because when that ex I told you about at the wedding, he used to tell me that ex was crazy, which is why he had to stay in the room with her, and that if he didn't stay in the room with her, she would just be mad and everything. That day actually went so much more than I actually said, right? So he used to tell me that that ex was crazy. So I figured that he would be telling that his new babe that I am the crazy one, and I just like came to come and see him today and all of that and all of that. So he left one of his phones, which was actually my phone that I gave him, so I could still see like messages. I could see, like, I could assess the phone. So I did, and I saw that he had been sending her money, but I was sending him money, right? And he always used to say that he didn't have money or anything, but he used to send her money. So I was, it was so funny to me. Like, why are you in primary three? You're too old for this. So I basically confronted him and asked him, like, what's up? You know, you're doing this, and you're cheating on me. And he was silent. He was like, can't you give me like a chance to lie? You're not even giving me a chance to lie and stuff like that. The conversation got really heated. And the next thing you know, he started like slapping me, punching me. Next thing I was on the floor. There's this industrial fan. I don't know if you know, it has this like really strong hand, like really strong, what they call that stand, right? It's iron, and he hits my head on it, and he just kept punching me. Like, I had this lace wig on, he pulled it from my head, so I had blisters. By the time everything was done, I actually had to get up and try and run away. And then he went to the kitchen to go and bring a knife, that he's going to kill me this night. He's a doctor, and we were living in a doctor's quarters, and he kept saying that he's going to kill me this night, and nobody would say anything to him. Or if I get injured, he would just take me to A&E, accidents and emergency. And nobody's going to question him because he's a doctor. Like, he kept saying that. And so I was trying to run away. I was even naked. So when he went to the kitchen to get the knife, I ran away with my clothes, and I was trying to like get it. And when I saw that he was coming to meet me, I started shouting like his full government's name that, you know, he wants to be. That's when he actually stopped, because someone now came, like I think security or something, that just rooms around came and asked what was going on. Of course, they would just think, oh, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend issues, they're fighting, and they left. Nobody saw me. So he just left me on the floor there, crying and crying and crying and crying. So this story is important because, like, 2 years later, when I started dating women, it became the basics of my own, whether I say retaliation or my... Okay, so what happened was I was dating this woman, and their relationship was very chaotic. There was a lot of emotional abuse from both parties. I think one thing was that, personally, I was so young and I had only been exposed to abuse as love and violence as love, because even my dad used to beat me. And so I always thought for love to exist, like, it has to look a certain way. It has to, the person has to be insulting you or ignoring your calls. So that was something she used to do a lot. She would just like ignore me for days, or if I asked her if she loves me, she would just like air me for days, and I'll have to beg her best friends, beg her to pick my calls. And yeah, so it was like that for a really long time. This is just like a suppressed version of the story. But the thing that really like flipped everything was when I went to see her. I went to see her because I thought that she was cheating on me. I still don't know if that actually happened, right? Because she was never 100% with me. She didn't know how to communicate. And that was like a huge problem for both of us. And when I'm asking for communication, I would even like be begging her to like, okay, let's have safe words. Like, if you don't want to talk about something, let's have you say, maybe say pineapple, and I'll leave it alone. And she'll be like, no, why would I want to say pineapple? And I didn't understand how I was supposed to know that, you know, you care about me or you love me. And I have anxiety, right? So it was really, really difficult. So that period, I saw she was cheating. What happened was I was supposed to come and see her. We had already planned a trip and everything. Everybody was excited about it. Or I thought everybody was excited about it. And then it did the trip when I had already packed. So something she used to do was she used to dictate, like, her best friend used to sort of dictate the pace of the relationship. I don't know how to explain it more than that. Like, she can be all sweet with me in private, but when her best friend is in the room or something, she would, you know, be less sweet, less hard, like be more hard or more difficult, yeah, or more like, for me, hard guy, basically, for me, right? So I think what happened was there was sort of an influence. So every time we wanted to see, if there was no best friend or family in the picture, it would go smoothly. But once there's something in that direction in the picture, she would just like say, you know, I'm not going to see you and it won't matter. Or she won't give me any explanation and I'll have to beg. And she just wants another thing. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. We had already planned the trip and everything. And then the day to the trip, she tells me that she feels pressured. And I'm like, where is that coming from? And then she doesn't discuss that any further. And she just like ends the call and goes to bed, right? So I called her in the evening. No. She didn't go to bed. She went back to work. So I called her after work because I was thinking, oh, maybe it's work. And I called her after work and she goes, she's still cold and everything. And I asked her if she even still loves me because I don't understand what is happening. And she just ends the call on me and refuses to talk to me for like a whole day. Had to beg her friend to beg her to pick my calls. And then she eventually picked the calls. And then she says, I personally said a lot of shit. One of the things that I did say was, I think I said, I wish I died, or I wish my mom died or something. Can't remember. One of all those things, so that she can give me attention, like something bad should happen to me. So if something bad happens to me, she would give me the attention that I want, right? And she said, why would I say something like that? Which I understand is very grave, right? So she was like, why would I say something like that? And in fact, I should die myself or something like that, right? And it was a really, really, really bad conversation. And we didn't talk for, I think, another 2 days. So on the second day, like from the day she canceled the trip, I had been crying my eyes out nonstop. So all the times I wasn't talking to her, the only time I would stop crying or even manage to drink water, it is when she talks to me. So on the second day, I realized that I couldn't keep doing that. So I went on a whim to see her. I didn't tell her I was coming. I didn't say anything. But on the way there, I started feeling bad for doing that. And then she actually now texted me to check on me and everything. And I couldn't tell her that I was on my way, but I was actually already on my way. And there was nothing I could do about that. And then at 9th, when I actually reached the place, that's when I called her and I told her that I was coming to her house. She lives with her best friend, so obviously that didn't go well. When I got there, she was sitting with her best friend in front of the house and with someone else, which is why I said I thought she was cheating, because first of all, my head was fogged and my perception of reality was different from what was actually happening. But actually still, and now knowing all the context, because then I was just acting on autopilot. I've gone to therapy now and I've reviewed this over and over. I'm not going to blame myself totally.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I got there and I saw 3 people there, but none of them answered me. So I just carried my, like, nobody said, oh, Miriam, welcome, or anything, or nobody acknowledged my presence. So I just went inside the room, dropped my stuff, and then I came back outside like, okay, let me present myself. I'm actually here. And then I didn't see anybody in the place that I left them. And then I went to the usual places that we hang out. I didn't see them there. So it felt like they were hiding something from me because they obviously all saw me come in and then they've all disappeared. So I went inside and I was telling my best friend at the time, who was also abusive, but that's a different story. I was telling my best friend at the time, this is what happened. Like, everybody just disappeared. And then both of them just entered the room and they're laughing seriously. I'm like, okay, what's happening? And then as I was trying to settle down, she just says, you know, you're going to leave within the next, I can't remember how many days she said. And that was like the first thing she said about acknowledging that I was there. And I'm like, okay, I would actually leave, no problem. And then I settled down and started asking her to talk to me. Let's talk. Being strange. Like, she doesn't want to talk. Then I was much more, my anxiety has controlled me much more. So, and I said, I won't talk like now. So I was really pestering her for a conversation. And so she kept like, first of all, before I even started saying I want to talk, I would catch her doing signs with her best friend. Like, I don't know what she was doing. So when that was happening, when I was telling her I want to talk, she was now telling her best friend, "Hey, you see what I'm talking about? If I slap this girl now," that kind of thing. Like, and I was still persistent on, if we talk outside of this room, maybe things will be fine. Because I know that the presence of her best friend is a, sort of gives her some, there's a different color it gives to whatever conversation we're having. So I wanted to talk outside of that conversation. But then she said something. She said she'll only talk with her in the room because I also talked to my best friend about our issues, right? Because, and I used to do that because she used to make me feel like I didn't know what I was saying or I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to have a witness. So I would just copy and paste our conversations for my best friend, like, see what I'm saying and see what this person is saying. Am I mad? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But she didn't like that, and I understand that, right? So I think that was why she said she wanted to talk with her own best friend in the room. But I understood that if a best friend was in the room, the conversation would not go well. So it was a real back and forth and everything. And then eventually, how I remember the story, because she has a different story, how I remember the story is I pulled her, like I was dragging her, like, let's go and talk, let's just go and talk, right? And see, this person's huge. So when they say the story, they say that I pushed her or whatever and she fell. I don't know how that happened, because if you're dragging, I think what was happening was that she was trying to get up and then she couldn't get up. And then eventually she got, because the bed itself was like low, it had the frame and the bed was inside the frame. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know if you can picture it. So she got up from there, and the first thing she did when she like got her balance was slap me, like, or attempt to slap me. Like, I just saw her hand like swing. And the first thing my mind saw was my ex, that's the one before her, the guy, yeah, trying to beat me. And I knew for a fact that I could not be in that situation again. Like, in that situation, I couldn't hear in one ear for a while. I had blood clots in my eye. My brain just did a flash, and I don't know the word. But basically, she tried to slap me, and that was what I saw, and I preempted it. I stopped the slap, and I think she pushed me to the bed because we both fell on the bed. I think I dragged her like when I was falling on the bed. And then she was trying to choke me, and I was trying to get her hands from my neck, right? And I pushed her and I bit her. This TMI. And I bit her, and yeah, I won't say I came to, it's this thing that your brain does when you're just in survival mode, right? Mm-hmm. So I wasn't there. And when I was there, I saw myself like shouting at her, why does he think that he would beat me like that? Why does he think that he would slap me like that? Why does he think he would? And then I realized that it was actually her.
A different situation.
Yeah. And then I started apologizing. I was telling her, I'm sorry. I was begging. It was, yeah, just chaotic from then on. But like I said, there are so many other things in between that. So many other things that happened in between and after that. So yeah, those are the experience.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry that you went through that. It sounds like there was like both emotional and physical abuse involved, yeah, in all that. How do you think that lesbian partner violence is different from heterosexual partner violence? Would you say they're different?
I think the only difference I would say to me is how you can't really communicate to your friends what's happening because nobody really takes you seriously, right? Or, yeah, that's it for me. That you can't really be explicit about this is what's happening, because I couldn't tell my friends then, like the core of my friends, because like I said, my best friend was also abusive and was practically doing worse to her partner at the time. So it wasn't a safe thing. It wasn't, that wasn't the best place to get help from or anything. And then on the other hand, we were my straight friends and I didn't have enough support there. But I feel like if I was dating a man, maybe it would have been easier. But then again, when that happened to me, I still couldn't communicate about it. So I don't really know if there is a difference except, you know, the sexualities.
Okay. Do you think that being in Nigeria, this society that's like deeply homophobic in terms of the behaviors of people, the way that people see same-sex couples and just the laws that exist, do you think that that kind of encourages intimate partner violence and same-sex relationships?
Yeah, I think it does, because there's nowhere to turn to. There's nobody to report to. There's nobody to tell. I was thinking about this recently. I have done episodes, right, on abuse. I think up to 4 episodes because of how much I have experienced, yeah, right? And so every time I have to listen to people talk about it, I start thinking of what to do about it. Like, mm-hmm, is it possible to have like maybe a small court for queer issues or whatever?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it does help. Like, it does make it worse.
Yeah. Do you think that the, because we have a lot of organizations that are set up to manage cases of like domestic violence or intimate partner violence, and there are helplines, there are safe houses that are supposedly set up to help women and to rescue women from violent situations. Do you think that those organizations, as they are in Nigeria right now, can sufficiently respond to cases of domestic violence or intimate partner violence in a lesbian relationship?
Nope. I don't think that they even help cases of heterosexual in a heterosexual relationships, yeah, because they usually just convince the woman to go back to the man or convince the person to go back or settle their shit. So yeah, I don't even think that it's helpful at all.
Yeah, and I've noticed that a lot of the materials and resources that these organizations put out, like, oh, what to do when you're in a violent situation or what to do when you're in an abusive relationship,
yeah,
it's like very targeted at heterosexual relationships.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't think that a queer woman who is in a domestic, a violent domestic situation would feel like they can go to these organizations for help or even the police. Do you think that, you've done episodes on your podcast about like abuse in queer relationships, do you think that queer people in Nigeria, and especially queer women, feel like they can go to the police, for example, when they're experiencing violence in their relationships?
No, they can't even go to their friends in most cases. Like, even mine is mine. Some of the stories I've heard, they can't go to their friends. They mostly can't talk about it, right? Because it's like, first of all, there's also another thing where people think that lesbian relationship is supposed to be this heaven because, mm-hmm, you're not dating a man.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be like sweets and everything and there's no abuse. So I think that sort of also hence like help, like colors the psych of the person,
yeah,
and not wanting to go to their friends because their relationship is so perfect or supposed to be so perfect.
Yeah, okay. I think that's very valid. What do you think that NGOs and women's rights organizations and domestic violence organizations need to do to be able to address intimate partner violence in same-sex relationships and also to show queer women that when they say we help women or we are here for women, they also mean women who are lesbians, women who are bisexual or transgender?
For me, I think it would be actually having queer women on their team. So you can't, because no matter how, will I say, woke you are now or accepting on Twitter, and there's still ingrained bias that, mm-hmm, you might not catch that a queer person will catch. So
yeah,
it's always helpful to have a queer woman on the team who understands these issues and can bring that nuance into the discussion.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Thank you so much, Miriam, for joining
You're
me
welcome.
On this episode. It was great to hear your story and great to have you here. Okay, folks, thank you so much for listening to this episode. And I hope you learned something about intimate partner violence and same-sex relations. If you or anyone you know is in a violent situation or experiencing intimate partner violence or any form of domestic violence and you need to reach out for help, you can reach out to the Initiative for Equal Rights and report the situation. Our website is theinitiativeforequalrights.org. And our social media is at Tears Nigeria. Tears is TIERS. Until the next episode, this remains Q Convos by the Initiative for Equal Rights. And my name is Fidelia. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Q Convos podcast, brought to you by the Initiative for Equal Rights, produced by 808 Extra. Kindly visit www.theinitiativeforequalrights.org to learn more.